You're listening to another episode of Open Source CXO, the podcast designed to share insights on how to excel in your business using technology, regardless of the industry. Host Robert Kehoe is a self-taught software developer who has grown to the role of CEO. Renowned for his collaborations with organizations such as Stanford University, Nelnet, and Louis Vuitton, he continually seeks new challenges to conquer in the world of tech. Accompanying him is Don Blackburn, a veteran COO with over 25 years of experience in cultivating diverse relationships and driving innovation in various technical projects. Each week, they'll be sitting down with some of the nation's foremost technology leaders to develop an open source playbook, drawing from their firsthand experiences in the field. Let's talk some tech.
Today, we're with Jeff Vandegrift. Jeff is CTO at Astra. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Thank you for coming. So to start things off, why don't we talk a little bit about AdAstra?
Sure.
I'm sure not everybody's familiar, although it's been a company that's been around for quite a while.
It is. They are, I think, celebrating their 28th birthday this year. I'm not sure exactly when it is, but so they've been around for a while, software company for a while. Their mission, it's one of the few companies I've worked for where I actually can quote the mission. It's to graduate more students faster. So they are just about building solutions that help higher ed institutions meet their students' needs in a more planful way, from making sure you're offering the right courses in the right format, the right place. It's actually startling how higher ed is not great at being thoughtful and planful about how they build their schedules. And so we help them do that. And as a result, more kids are able to graduate on time. Everybody is in Kansas City.
Oh, nice.
We're in the office, and that's a really important part of developing software. I sometimes say that
couldn't agree more.
Developing software is a social endeavor.
Yeah. There's people booing you right now.
Yeah. No, I know.
I get a lot of hate for it too, surprisingly.
One of the categories we like to do on all our podcasts is kind of learn how our guests got to where they are.
It's right? The path to leadership.
Path to leadership. How did you get to be an executive in IT? Was this something you set out to do from the time you were a high school student, or is this something that in college you figured it out, or
no?
Well into your career.
Yeah, well into my career.
Well, you mentioned you also just really didn't do it for the passion at first. You really did
Right. I mean, so I was going to be a physicist when I went to college. That was my plan. And life had different plans for me. and I had been sort of a developer hobbyist as a kid. And so it was easy for me to find work. I started out as a tester for a place in Austin, Texas. And then, quickly realized, no, I mean, I can write code. I'd like to write code. That seems like that would be a lot more fun. And but at that point, it was just like, no, this is a way to kind of put food on the table. And it continued that way until I had these leaders that sort of pulled me kicking and screaming into, no, you'd be good, Jeff. You'd be good. You need to be a manager for us. And they married the architect and manager role. The title was manager and architect, or senior manager and architect, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I did not love it.
Part about it didn't you love?
I just didn't feel like I don't think I understood what it meant to be a manager.
Okay.
I thought being a manager meant, well, you're the smartest guy in the room. You gotta be able to evaluate, all the work everybody's doing, and you have to be able to, evaluate the people, evaluate the work that they're doing. I can hardly do that for myself. How am I going to do that for, these 5-10 people that work for me? One of the things I had done, this was all while I was at Perceptive Software where I got promoted. One of the things I had done there is this is the early days of this thing called continuous integration, which I ran into at a trade show, and I was like, oh man, that's where it's at. We've got to do this. And they were kind enough to let me build. This cruise control was the continuous integration server at the time. And we got that up and running, and it was, that felt really good. And because of that, that business lost their their testing manager. And so they're like, Jeff, you seem to be really good at this. Would you, maybe you can go kind of get our testing group kind of up to snuff, modern, agile, all that kind of stuff. Like, okay, that sounds kind of interesting. I'll go do that. And then the Lexmark acquisition happened and they were purchasing companies all over the world. And I found myself with like, well, an org that's bigger than the company I work for now. And I had managers that worked all over the world, like 7 different countries. And it was cool. I got to see the world and everything. Yeah. But I literally, you know, found myself in my office like, what do people think I do here?
Imposter syndrome a little bit.
It was just really hard. And that was when the Milo thing came along and we got to go do Holacracy. And it just transformed the way I thought about how people do work, how management could be done. And realized that management is much different than what I had imagined. It's about people. It's about this complex system of people, which is really, really interesting. I'm kind of a you know, like an economics buff or nerd or whatever. And you know, a lot of the things that you learn in economics, you can actually apply to, you know, well, systems of people and businesses, and have to worry about things like unintended consequences and all that. And so I was able to kind of geek out on that sort of thing and worry about the processes and the systems and the incentives that are in place and all that. And so when, like I said, when the CTO at Ad Astra, you know, suggested, hey, why don't you come try all that stuff here? And I did. And at that point I was like, I think this is my sweet spot. And I don't see myself being a CTO or anything like that. But then that CTO left.
They keep ripping you in positions that you've never wanted, man.
And then the CEO was kept. No, I really need more of your time on the executive team, and eventually pulled me there. And that's been fun, just because it's totally new challenges, things that I wouldn't have ever really thought to care about before, but find myself actually being kind of passionate about. And, you know, it's fun to worry about the overall strategy and success of a business over time.
Mm-hmm. The big picture.
Never would have thought of that before. So that's kind of not, I don't know what's next. I guess CEO.
Yeah, but you, CEO. Yeah. So you enjoy that CTO role.
I do. Okay. Yes. I can say without a doubt, Ad Astra, part of it is just me maturing, but Ad Astra is the best job I've ever had. And I've been pleasantly surprised at how much fun it's been to be CTO. Awesome.
So out of curiosity, though, how far into your career were you before you got your first management gig? I think
that's a good question.
That's always been intriguing to me, is because I talk to some people that, I was a developer for 4 years, and then I became a manager.
Yeah, no.
It's like, really?
No.
4 years? That's nothing, right?
I was probably closer to 20 for me.
Oh, okay. So you were in engineering for a long time.
Yeah.
Or testing.
Let's see. It would have been like, maybe 2010, I agree. So maybe 17 years.
That's a long time. Okay. So you made your way up through engineering, senior engineering, lead, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
And then worked your way into, pulled all the way into management.
Pulled into management.
All right, fair enough. Mm-hmm. That's always, and did you feel like, it's intriguing to me that you spent that much time in there then, and you still didn't understand what a manager was. Do you attribute that to, maybe you didn't have good managers, mentors, or
no? That's the irony, especially at Perceptive Software. I had great managers. In fact, you may know him. He's relatively well known in the area. Hugh Kahn is his name. He was a VP of engineering at Perceptive Software. Was my direct boss for a while, and so much of what I learned were seeds that were planted by him. You know, mm-hmm. At the time, I'd be like, that's crazy. What are you talking about? and then eventually it's like, oh, I know what he was talking about. But, you know, I think, you know, the other thing is, I still think there's a lot of managers out there that just get it wrong. And it's, you know, it should be a very different job than it is. You know, like I often say that I think a manager's most important job, got this from Hugh, the guy I was just talking about, manager's most important job, hiring and firing. How many technical dudes that work their way up the ranks want to care about hiring and firing? You know, that's a pain.
Why do I want it to be a pain.
But it's very, very important. It's the biggest lever you have.
Hiring the right people.
Hiring the right people.
Knowing what you're looking for, and then intentionally going out and interviewing and hiring for that.
Yeah.
So in that same vein, there's actually a question or maybe even a topic that I was just curious about because it matches very closely kind of with what we do here. You mentioned that you love having a Kansas City team.
Yes.
I'd like to know why. Like, obviously, development, we're going to get a thousand different arguments. Maybe we cut this out. But every time I talk about it, I'm big into U.S.-based development. We try to stick here in Kansas City, but some of the tech stuff we need, we do a lot of Laravel and stuff. So we reach, you know, we're still U.S.-based, just, you know, in various states.
Yeah.
I'm very curious why you guys chose to stick close to home and why, you know, obviously there's that, you know, there's the offshore route, the nearshore route, there's the domestic route. I'm curious your take on all that.
Yeah.
Not trying to throw my opinions in there quite yet. I'm just asking.
I'm going to get some hate mail about this.
yep, you will.
I just believe in being in the office. And again, this is something, an intuition I picked up from prior managers, but it was while I was working at Ad Astra. We actually, when I started there, we had a couple of people that had remote days. I mean, so I'm talking about not just Kansas City, but in the office.
Now,
right now we're in the office.
Oh, that's unique right now too.
We're in the office 3 days a week.
That's still hybrid.
That's great.
It is hybrid. Yeah. But it's important that we all agree on what the days are that we're in the office.
Oh, so everybody's in.
Yeah, you guys want to work together.
Yeah. Okay. So if we're going to get the benefit of co-location, we want to do that. So, but there's just so many things that have pushed me over the edge on this. And the first thing that just confirmed my intuition, there's a really good book out there called Culture Code. I don't know if you've read it. In that book, he talks about this thing called the Allen Curve, which was a study that was done. It's been quite a while ago now. Like, it was back in the 80s, but it's been replicated since then. But where he discovered that when the finding was that when people work within 10 meters of each other, the frequency of their communications, both physically, you know, real time, and virtual email, you know, instant messaging, the frequency of communications skyrockets if you work within 10 meters.
10 meters, okay.
And they found that projects actually get by co-located teams get completed more quickly. So
I'm digging out that book.
Yeah.
I'm going to find it.
I got a whole arsenal of this kind of information. Another study that was really interesting was a meta study of research papers where they looked at co-authors. And well, I guess one of the ways that the success of a research paper gets measured is by the number of citations it receives. So the more citations, it's considered a better paper. So they basically look to see if the co-authors are co-located, how does that correlate to the number of citations, the quality of the paper? And again, it was very, very strongly correlated.
Interesting.
Co-located researchers produced better research. If you've read the book Team Topologies, that's a relatively new book, really interesting. One of you guys have probably talked about Conway's Law before, you know, that the architect, your software architecture will reflect your organizational structure. Mm. And so there's this interesting thing in team topologies when they talk about there's different types of teams for different purposes. One of the tools they give a manager that is worrying about teams is if you want the interface between two teams to be loosely coupled, you should put those teams on separate floors of a building because then they're not communicating regularly and that will influence the architecture and you lose that tool if everybody's remote. So it starts with, I just feel strongly about, there's a whole lot more I could bore you with, but so I feel very strongly about just being in the office together.
You think it produces a better product,
better
more
software.
Cohesion.
And so that's what's kept me, even through the pandemic, from going offshore, even just out of state or anything like that. I feel very strong.
Well, I would think you're in a unique situation then, because a lot of people are doing the hybrid thing, but they leave it up to the employees saying, you know, I need you in the office 2 days, 3 days a week. You pick the days, but they got to be here. You got to be, but you're unique in that, hey, we're going to be here Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or whatever those days are. Everybody's going to be in the same days.
I like that.
Can you see, that is interesting. Can you see a difference? Can you see a difference? Or is it just too small?
I mean, did you guys do the same? Obviously, you didn't do it during the pandemic when everybody
was. No, everybody was remote during the pandemic.
But you went back to it. Obviously, there was
some
sense.
We did, and we started the way you're describing. Hey, everybody just tried to get in a couple days a week or whatever.
Right.
But then what we were discovering is we weren't getting kind of the synchronization we had maybe hoped for. What I've found, you know, maybe hybrid. By the way, the only person I've heard talking about this topic very honestly is Adam Grant. You know, he's from early on was like looking at both sides of the issue, I thought, very even-handedly and had interesting things to say about both. And what he's been saying for a while is that hybrid really seems to be kind of this great middle space because you get those sort of high bandwidth communication days, but then other days when people can stay heads down and get kind of
which might be the most effective, right? Yeah.
And so, shoot, where was I going with that? That's the question.
Well, is it? Oh, yeah. Tell if there's a drop off.
Yeah. So has it resulted in, you know, better software or something like that? I mean, that's hard to measure, right? If somebody had the magic. But one of the things I've definitely seen is definitely more spontaneous conversations going on. One of the interesting phenomena I've observed is I've heard people say, oh, that meeting, let's do that in the office. Pick a day when we're going to be in the office because that's going to be a lot easier conversation to have over there, which is like, okay, great. At least we've got that. People realizing the benefit of kind of that high bandwidth conversation. People don't want to be in the office, but typically when they are there, they're having a lot more fun.
Yeah, than they want to admit.
It's funny, though, how, you know, divisive that whole thing is. You know, there's people that are so passionate about and just won't listen.
And I get it. It's a quality of life thing, you know? Like, I've got kids. Everybody's got lives and stuff. I totally understand.
Yes, for sure. So there's, I guess, two more thoughts on this. One, when people will often say, but I'm more productive at home. And my reaction to that is I don't actually care about your productivity. I care about the team's productivity.
Oh, interesting.
I'm trying to care for the system,
argument.
Not the individual. But the other side that I have to come to terms with is I'm competing in a market for talent where people can get full remote jobs.
And so correct.
I would claim the jury's still out in terms of the market has not made the call yet.
Right.
And so as long as I can get people into the office and post-pandemic, there's a few people we've hired that they're like, no, I want to be back in the office. So
we've heard the same thing. We've heard the same thing from various people. And we have people come in here often enough.
Yeah.
Now we don't.
Even when we told them not to, they were still here today.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Don't come in. They're coming in here.
Right. No. And we still had John and Kevin here. But it's interesting to me. And I think there's a lot of people that aren't being truthful with themselves or maybe not being truthful with us when they say I'm more productive at home. Because I think.
And that's up in the air all by itself.
I think there's a certain percentage that are probably good, you know.
Yeah. It depends, right? Yeah.
Right. I'm one that freely admits I suck at working from home. I'm bad at it, right? Yeah. I get distracted easily. I don't, you know, I do it occasionally and I'm able to focus enough. Yeah. But if I had to do it every day, I think it would go down and I would go nuts because, well, I'm a very social creature. So I want to hang out and talk to other people. Yeah. But that whole thing of no, I'm more productive at home is kind of are you really?
Because maybe
I've seen
probably not. But
we've had some that where you go, well, you're clearly not good at it.
You know, it doesn't help. Like it's very common this day and age with the open office, the open floor plan kind of a thing. And like, I don't have my ideal office set up that I would like. What I would really like is, you know, a cluster of small offices with doors because software is deep work.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to be able to close out the world.
And that's wear headphones here. I know we've got sort of that open office concept too, but they put in their headphones and they get lost.
And so when people say I'm more productive at home,
that's often what I'm hearing. It's like, I can't concentrate here because there's so much noise going on around me. And I have a lot of sympathy for that.
Yeah, I get that.
For sure.
I appreciate the insight there. That was a cool little tangent, I think. No, this was great, though, man. And I do appreciate you taking the time. I hope you felt good about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Great.